Attention, listener. I have an assignment for you. Your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to engage with the real nerds, aka the best podcasts on the internet. You can listen to their episodes on their website, realnerdspodcast.com. And you can also listen to them on Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, and iTunes. Follow their social media pages on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. This message will self-destruct? Never.
Who shot, and a real nerd can follow the plot, and a real nerd can
talk film. I'm sorry.
Take it outside.
Well, a real nerd knows who shot, and a real nerd can follow the plot, and a real nerd will get out of the gods. Lights, camera, action.
Hey, you're listening to Real Nerds Podcast, the best movie podcast in all of Arrakis. I am Ryan. I am joined by my trusty compadre, Brad.
He who controls the spice controls all.
Every week on Real Nerds Podcast, we see a new movie. We podcast our experience to the world. This week, we're going to change it up, Brad, because you know how I like to surprise you every once in a while on an episode. I decided, just me, this had nothing to do with you. I decided since when Dune came out in 2021, it was never a, featured episode. And I thought we would take this opportunity for a first after 13 years. We're still innovating while we podcast. So we're going to review both Dune and Dune Part Two on this episode of Real Nerds Podcast.
Oh man, two movies at the same time?
What do you think about that you had no idea what I was doing?
That's how are we going to do that? That's two movies in one episode. That's, we can do that?
Yeah, since we changed the format, how long we've been doing it this way? Maybe 2 years now?
Yeah, sounds right.
We kind of shortened the episodes, and I mean, we used to go long, and I mean, I literally had a memory on Facebook today talk about how James and I went off about 50 Shades Darker, and the episode was Logan. So, you know, you never know what you're going to get from us in the old days. Now we're a little more structured. And I don't know if it's better, but who knows?
Hey, write in, tell us if it's better or not. We don't know. We haven't gotten a lot of mail for the past 3 or 4 years.
I know, which is weird. I know people still listen because I get like comments every once in a while. I don't know if there's a way we can make it more interactive. I don't know. Hey, email us to make it more interactive. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't mind doing our own thing. We've been doing it for like 12 years, but yeah, it'd be nice to know for you. Maybe little feedback on we're heading the right direction or not.
Yeah. Cause you know me, I always like to change things up. I keep waiting for you to change our logo to pink and blue, but you haven't done it yet.
For that movie from a year ago. Yeah. That's timely.
No, I just like how it looked like the pink and blue.
Oh, I'm like we're having a baby.
Yeah, exactly.
We're having a little film baby.
I'm always looking to stay fresh. We've had red for 2 years now. I want something new, Brad. I want you to blow my mind.
Oh, God. The red and white one wasn't enough?
No. I need you to think of something that's cool.
That our watch it pins aren't cool enough?
They are. Make it purple and white. I don't care. I just like to see new things. I like it. Because, hey, you seriously design a new thing for our show like once a month. So, you know, we can add a new color to the background of our logo.
Should I just make like a file that has our logo against each and every color that exists?
Yeah. Then just send it to me and I get a pick.
All right.
I just like how the pink that you put for Film Explosion, I just thought had this like pop to it. You know, it's unique. I mean, how many like people walk around with a pink logo?
Not a lot. It's a
exactly
bit of a limited palette. Yeah,
it stands out.
Does it just remind you of all your salmon colored shirts that you wear?
I know. I still have them. I wear them golfing all the time, and my golf partners make fun of me.
While we've been talking about this, I was looking up, like, why didn't we see Dune as our movie of the week back in October 22nd, 2021? Halloween Ends came out, or the one before that, Kills?
Yeah, it has to be Halloween Kills.
Kills came out that week. It's just, I guess it doesn't seem right, but I guess Dune, it came out on streaming, so maybe they didn't compete in the box office.
Yeah, I don't know.
And then we did the French Dispatch the week after, so.
Yep. So you're just like, Paul.
Dune looks stupid. I hate the trailer. And then you're like, we're watching Halloween. And then French Dispatch. And then Soho.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes things pop up.
So yeah, now we're rectifying. We're going to give it some attention.
Speaking of which, hey, Brad, do you recommend Dune 2021?
Yeah, it's a pretty film. Story-wise, I wasn't terribly engaged. Gorgeous to look at, but, very familiar story. And it's kind of like, I don't know, it feels like just two scenes like one takes place, like there's an assault and then there's like an exodus and that's the movie. So yeah, it's a gorgeous film, and you can check it out if you want.
Funny story is I watched it for the first time 2 weeks ago. I got the 4K, man, either a Black Friday or some sort of sale. I definitely did not pay full price for it. Not because I don't think the movie's worth it. It's just I hadn't seen it, and so I didn't, you know, want to spend $35 on it. And eventually it dropped to like $11. So yeah, I think the movie's pretty good. You're right, it's beautiful. It has a cool political thing going on with it. I had fun watching it. Here's the trailer for Dune 2021.
My planet Arrakis is so beautiful when the sun is low. Rolling over the sands, you can see spice in the air. The outsiders ravage our lands in front of our eyes. Their cruelty to my people is all I've known. What's to become of our world?
A boy!
Hey, Duncan, can I trust you with something?
Yes, always, you know that.
I've been having dreams about a girl on Arrakis. I don't know what it means.
Dreams make good stories. But everything important happens when we're awake.
Hey, you, put on some muscle?
I did?
No.
We are House Atreides. There is no call we do not answer. There is no faith that we betray.
Smile, Gurney.
I am smiling.
The Emperor asks us to bring peace to Arrakis. House Atreides accepts!
I know you. There's only awakening in my mind.
You need to face your fears.
Come with me.
You need to be ready. You've never met Harkonnens before. They're not human, they're brutal.
The Duke's son sees too much.
This is my Dune. Kill them all.
God in heaven.
Get everything with guns off the ground! Go!
This is an extermination. They're picking my family off one by one.
Let's fight like demons.
future of House Atreides.
A great man doesn't seek to lead. He's called to it. But if your answer is no, you'll still be the only thing I ever needed you to be. My son.
If anything happens, will you protect Paul?
With my life.
Only together can we stand a chance.
So, Brad, have you seen the original Dune, 1984's Dune?
So, yeah, in response to this episode, I was like, okay, I'm going to finally pop in the 84 Dune, and I could not finish it.
Yeah, it's not good.
Yeah. I mean, in 1984 terms, not terrible, I guess. It's kind of very similar. Definitely it gets a vibe of, like, we're trying to jump on the Star Wars bandwagon. I think Jedi came out the year before it. Yeah.
Yeah. But the acting isn't very good and, the special effects are not very good. But even like 84, spoiler, Filmflosion 1984 is going to be out in the next month or so. So
yeah,
stay tuned. If your favorite film, 1984 is a cool year. So, there'll be a fun one. But anyways, back to Dune 2021. You're right. You kind of touched on it and when you're introducing it. It's this world in the universe has this thing called spice, which is the all powerful mineral. I mean, I guess I really don't know what it's kind of a MacGuffin. I really don't know what it does.
I looked it up. It powers the transportation so that people can go to planet really fast, which when I was watching Dune 2, I was like, wait. The other movie took place on another one. I thought everything just took place on Arrakis the whole time. And yeah, there was like, when I rewatched, you know, this one, I was like, oh, there was like a planetary jump that I just totally forgot about.
Yeah. It's, so they go to Arrakis because they've negotiated some sort of peace deal. Poe Dameron and Luke Skywalker, Leto and his son Paul. The names in it kind of make me laugh because I don't know if because I'm used to Star Wars where it's, Obi-Wan or Han Solo. Here it's Paul and Duncan
and Jessica.
Yeah. I mean, it's fine. I mean, they're people's names. I just always expect them to be more fantastical, I guess, yeah, in sci-fi.
But even Star Wars, like Luke is like Lucas. That's not too far out. And Ben, you know.
Yeah, I guess. I never thought about it. But yeah, so they go to Arrakis to broker this peace deal and be able to harvest the spice. While they're harvesting the spice, they have to contend with the giant sandworms that listen to the vibrations in, I guess, the spice fields. I don't know what you would call it. The spice dunes.
Yeah, the dunes, I guess, yeah.
Well, I guess that's the name of the movie, maybe. Well, maybe I'm on to something.
The Fremen name for Arrakis is Dune.
See, that's why you're around. You remember things I don't.
I don't feel like I should remember that much. why do I know that? I mean, anyway.
Yeah. So, Leto is betrayed by a guy who is in
the Emperor.
Yeah, well, who's the guy who betrays him, though? The Emperor betrays him, but there's a guy in his inner circle that does it.
Yeah, I forget his name, but he's like his lead scientist or something. The Harkonnen have kidnapped his wife and daughter, so he betrays Leto, expecting to get them back in exchange for handing them over. And then, obviously, like, that guy's an idiot, because, of course, Harkonnen just kills him. It's like, oh, you can rejoin them.
Yeah. In hell,
yeah. But it's cool, like, they have that, like, shield thing, and there's all these, like, flying dragonfly parasites flying around that's pretty scary, that you know, they sneak around and like all of a sudden they're on your back or something.
Yeah, it was. I mean, the movie looked cool, and the, you know, the political intrigue where they're, you know, betrayed and things like that. I mean, it plays well. And the, so Paul and his mom are taken off while this surprise attack by the Emperor is happening, and they're not killed because I can't keep the people straight. The lady people that are with
the Bene Gesserits.
Yeah, they'd be able to read that they killed them, and I guess you're not supposed to do that.
The Jedi. Yep.
Yeah. and so they're dumped out in the wasteland. They take up with the
Fremen.
Thank you. Yeah, the Fremen. And they save him, but he has to prove himself by fighting one of them to the death, which he does.
And the Fremen are very skeptical of Caladanians. I guess that's what they are, because they've been oppressed by the Emperor and the Harkonnens for so long. And so, he has to prove himself.
And so he does. And we meet Zendaya. I can't remember characters' names. Chani.
I think is a character that Kristen Wiig played on Saturday Night Live.
And so they kind of take them under their wing, and that's where the movie pretty much ends. Which I thought this movie, the first book, was split into two parts. But I guess it's the first two novels.
Wait, this one movie is two novels?
Yeah. Because let me double check if I remember reading it right. But yeah. But you know, we touched on it. It looked cool. I mean, Denis Villeneuve, he always makes really cool looking movies.
Yeah, I read something where he's like, he cares very little about the dialogue and more about just telling the movie through visuals. So he's got that on lock.
Yeah, he does that really cool kind of silhouetted foreground with colors in the background.
Yeah, like it looks great. Like even the special effects, just everything looks like it holds up. There's no like I couldn't point to any like bad CGI. Yeah, like it looks really solid.
It looks great, and
like there's no uncanny valley effects, I think, in the movie.
No, even you get a good sense that you know the worms is pretty cool. It has a very big sense of grandeur and how big and powerful the worm is. It has a similar vibe to Star Wars.
I was reading something else too, that Frank Herbert, you know, when Star Wars came out, he was like this close to suing, and like I don't blame him. Like Lucas took a lot of this and just like tweaked it just a little bit for a lot of these things, because growing up in film school, you're taught that like Star Wars is based on the hero's journey, that Chris Vogler book, a lot of movies are based on that structure. The fact that this book came out like a couple years before Star Wars and everything, it's like, man, the template is very much there, even just like kind of character naming and style. And yeah, like the fact that there's this like Jedi Council and they're trying to train a boy and they live on the sand planet, and what else?
This is a lot. As I'm reading this, Warner Brothers did split the first book up into two, much like It, which they also produced.
So that would mean that the first book is Dune 1 and part 2?
Yes.
So it was flipped. So they made two movies out of one book.
Correct.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
That makes more sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't imagine like one book was just like, you meet Paul Atreides, and then they're like, they settle on Arrakis, and then like it ends in the book.
Yeah. You know, it does take a while to get to some of the action in this movie. It does feel very deliberate in its pace.
Yeah, rewatching it, like, it's that whole assault thing wasn't as long as I remember. Like, it's maybe 5 minutes of the movie. My memory, it felt like it was like a third of it. But yeah, it's pretty brief. Because, yeah, a lot of the movie is just, you know, the Harkonnens get banished from the planet. Leto comes in. They kind of get acclimated to how the spice production goes. And then all of a sudden, the Emperor sends in their like secret elite force, which are, you know, dressed in white like stormtroopers. And then lay waste to the place. And then, Jessica and Paul get escape to the dunes and then meet the Fremen, and that's it.
Yeah, and it's a not a bad way to leave a film on a cliffhanger, because it doesn't feel, I mean, it still feels like it tells a whole story, but you want to see what happens next.
Definitely, like, it's a great cliffhanger, because I remember the first time I watched it, I was like, this is the movie, now it's starting. Like, now I'm interested. And then, yeah.
You were interested, Brad. So let's fast forward. We're 3 years in the future. We're in 2024.
Wow. Everything's so cool. Flying cars.
Do you recommend Dune Part 2?
Yeah, it's another like really well-made, gorgeous looking movie. But similar situation, the story just not that interesting for me. A lot of the runtime, I was just sitting there going like, when's something significant going to happen? Like, we're meeting a lot of people, we're doing a lot of training montages.
We should just like slide in Team America's montage in any montage in movies anymore.
It was kind of like, okay, where's overall, like, just like, what's the story happening here? You know, everything I'm looking at is like, I've seen this, I saw this in Empire Strikes Back. So let's, let's move this along. How about you?
I actually really like this one. Did you see this in a premium format?
No, I saw it at the Esquire.
When I saw it at the big show and they were doing the, learning how to ride the sandworms, the whole theater was like shaking. It was pretty awesome. I really like this one. I like the, intrigue behind it. I thought there was a couple shocking character moments in the movie. I really enjoyed it. Here's a trailer for Dune Part 2.
It's okay. I'm here. It's been a while since you've had one of those nightmares. Tell me, what was it about?
It's only fragments. Nothing's clear. You've been fighting the Harkonnens for decades.
Luke!
My family's been fighting them for centuries.
Your blood comes from dukes and great houses. Here, we're equal. What we do for the benefit of all.
Well, I'd very much like to be equal to you.
Maybe I'll show you the way.
Deal with this prophet. Send assassins.
Fade Rotha. He's psychotic.
The
see possible futures all at once. And in so many futures, our enemies prevail. But I do see a way. There is a narrow way through. My allegiance is to you. Do you believe me?
This is a form of power that our world has not yet seen. The ultimate power.
I want you to know I will love you as long as I breathe.
You will never lose me as long as you stay who you are.
Consider what you're about to do, Paul Atreides.
Silence!
This prophecy is how they enslave us!
So we're picking up right where the first part of Dune ends, and Paul is trying to build up the trust with the Tarkatans and
the what?
A Mortal Kombat reference.
Oh.
The people that live on the plains and sands in Mortal Kombat.
Gotcha.
That joke would kill in a Mortal Kombat chat room.
Oh, that slayed me. Fatality.
Yeah. So the Tarkatans are in the like wasteland of, you know, Outworld. And anyways, he wants to prove himself. And Javier Bardem's character, who I always forget their names because they're weird, he believes that Paul is the chosen one.
He's Morpheus.
Yeah, or, you know, Anakin. And so he believes all these prophecies, and Johnny doesn't. They're the non-believers. I guess they're the kind of the atheists of group.
They're the Gen Z Fremen.
Yeah.
They're like, we don't need your traditions.
That's awesome. Paul is humble, and he wants to prove himself. And he does multiple times, whether it's in combat or riding the sandworms. And
pretty easily, too. Like, he never really stumbles at doing anything.
Nah, dude is a freaking superhero.
Right out of the gate, he's just a pro at everything.
You know, we learned that his mom is pregnant, too, with the daughter. And his mother is able... They kind of have, like, a... psychic ability or telepathic, I guess.
Force powers, yes.
Yes. And, she joins part of the old cult of, like, they seem like witches to me. I don't know.
Yeah. They're the Fremen want to kill her because she's kind of useless otherwise. So they're like, hey, we'll give you a choice. Not really a choice. You can either die or you can become one of our, like sacred mothers or something. I think it's the name.
Yeah, a revered mother.
Yeah, Reverend Mother.
Yeah, Reverend Mother. There we go. We landed on it.
So she's like, I guess I'll take the life one.
Yeah. And
just to drink this blue shit.
Yeah, her character in this, because she plays up Paul from behind the scenes, where she lends credence to his ascension to a higher power, basically. And she preys on the not as well educated people, and she uses them to help prop up her son's propaganda. And they start believing the hype.
And I know. What a wild fairy tale. That would never happen in real life.
I know, right? Where did that come from? And when he does this, Paul says to Shawnee, where they start building a relationship and they fall in love, and he says, you know, I'll never betray you or who I am.
As long as I breathe, I will always love you.
Yeah, but he starts playing the long game here, and for how he feels his family was wrong, and he literally basically tells her to go pound sand, and he embraces this savior attitude, or I guess persona, and he leads the rebellion against the emperor.
That's like the big difference between this and Star Wars, is that the hero is actually out for revenge.
Yeah, and I get it. I mean, if someone killed my dad and my family and took everything I had, I'd be pretty fucking pissed too.
Yeah. I do think he's like, he actually does love her, but getting revenge is more important to him. So he's like, I can't tell you that I'm playing this right now, but so that sucks, but that's what I'm doing, is like, I'm playing all sides to attain my goal.
And you know, that last scene where he fights Austin Butler, where he tells her, no matter what happens, I'll always love you. And then he turns right around and says, I'll marry your daughter if you know, to Christopher Walken, the real architect behind the killing of his father.
Yeah. It's this extra flex, because, like, not only does it make him kiss his ring, but he's like, I'm going to take your daughter too.
Yeah, and I'm going to bone her. I'm going to bone her so hard.
Yeah. So I also, like, imagine too, because he knows that the Bene Gesserit could probably read his thoughts. Like, he can't sit there and be like, you know, by the way, Chani, I'm just doing this so that, you know, this is my plan. Like, he just can't articulate any of that.
Yeah. You know, I will say that Zendaya is really good in these moments. Cause she's able to convey without saying a word, heartbreak and anger towards him. And even Timothée Chalamet, I think, is really great at having that rage about how they've wronged his family, and he's going to fucking take them out no matter what. And again, this movie is beautiful. I thought it was a really cool choice with I don't remember Austin Butler's character's name, but he's like some crazy cannibal guy.
Yeah, Fade Shand. He's like the cousin of the Harkonnens, Baron Harkonnen, or whatever.
That black and white scene was shot so cool.
Yeah.
When they would go out to like the eclipse and it would flip what was white and black, I thought it looked incredible.
Yeah, it was cool that that was interesting that normally those arena tournaments are like all the opponents are like drugged, and so they know they're gonna win. So I'm like, I don't know why it seems like a tradition to do that. So I don't know why everyone's like super excited about it. And I was surprised that he's surprised when one of them is not drugged and he actually has to fight, because he knows he's such a badass that I'm just surprised he was like, I almost died there. Like, were you actually worried? Because, like, as a supreme fighter, you shouldn't be worried.
He's really good in the movie, too. He imitated Stellan Skarsgård's voice really well to sound like him.
Yeah. I don't know, like, nothing against, like, I didn't think the character was actually that interesting.
And, no.
Like, the performance is good, but, I don't know, people are talking about, like, this groundbreaking thing, and, like, he's barely in it, and when he does, like, I don't know, I just didn't see him being all that weird, or, you know, like, there were a lot of comparisons being made to, like, Heath Ledger and The Dark Knight.
No, I don't get that.
Yeah, I was like, I don't see that. Like, it's a good performance, but I was just
that's what I mean. Like, the performance is good. I mean, the character as a whole.
Yeah, the character's just not, I was like,
doesn't have the depth of the Joker. You know, Heath Ledger's Joker is, not only is the character fun, but what makes him so interesting is he plays all angles, and his end game is to turn the people of Gotham against the heroes, which he does.
Yeah.
And
he's got like a cool plan to go along with it.
Exactly. Cause he even says, you know, like, I don't care about the money, you know, what's money? It's, and, you know, Austin Butler, like I said, he sounds just like Stellan Skarsgård, which sounds awesome. But his motivation at the end of the day is he wants to kill people.
Yeah. So it's not very
dimensional.
Yeah. And then, yeah, he has that knife fight at the end, and it's cool and choreographed, but like, it wasn't like this awesome fight, you know, to me.
Yeah, it's, I agree.
It, like, the only cool part is that it mirrors the training fight that Brolin and Chalamet do in the first movie, because that's how Brolin wins that fight. So, yeah, Paul just does the same thing there. But yeah, it was a fight.
Yeah, you know, I'm always surprised. You know, I never thought I would like Timothy Chalamet as much as I do, but he does a pretty good job of commanding
from M. Night Chalamet.
Yeah. you know, because I think he's really fun in Wonka, and then to see him kind of play a more conflicted character, I thought he was really good at.
Yeah. I mean, across the board, like, I think everyone's like turning in like great stuff.
Oh yeah, everyone's pretty great in that movie.
And yeah, like, between French Dispatch and Wonka and this, like, yeah, definitely not a flash in the pan actor. He's got the chops for sure. And it's really heartbreaking when you do see him like 180 and like, oh, okay, he's gonna embrace the, you know, his father's legacy, and probably I don't know, I haven't read the books, but ever since I'm getting about what happens next, because there's got to be a third one, right?
Yeah. I heard the book, though, that comes next, called Dune Messiah, is not good.
Yeah, it's the Dark Knight thing. He's either die a hero, or you see yourself become the villain, and then, yeah, or live long enough to become the villain. And so, yeah, it sounds like his whole Messiah complex is going to go horribly, horribly wrong. And then, what's her name? Anna Taylor-Joy. Like, there's this, when he drinks like the worm piss, he sees her in some dream montage or whatever. Mm-hmm. That's his sister, right?
Yeah. That's what I gathered.
Which I was like, oh, so like Return of the Jedi, this, girl he meets is, we're going to find out that she's his sister. Yes. Yeah. Okay.
That's what I gathered. And I mean, I guess they have to have another one. I mean, that's kind of a super small part for an actress as accomplished as her.
Yeah. Just fill in for that. Yeah. The only thing that throws me off is, like, I read a bunch of stuff where Denis Villeneuve didn't want to do the third one because he's kind of like a little burnt out on these. So I don't know.
That'll be interesting, because it has such a visual language that.
Yeah, I can't imagine, like, because even if you get someone else to do it, they're not going to like copy what he did. Like, even though that's what the audience would want to see, is like just a consistent production design and like actors and everything. But like, as an artist, you can't just like ape everything that the other guy did. Like,
exactly.
You want to put your own flavor on it. So if someone else does it, it's going to, like, in subtle ways, just have a different feel to it. And a lot of that, you know, the look of the movie comes from Greg Frazier. So
yeah,
I don't know if like you get him back, or he'll come back without Denis Villeneuve. Like, if you get someone else to lens it, it's going to look different. So
yeah, I don't know. You do. I mean, obviously they're probably going to make another one. It's, I mean, making tons of money. So
yeah, yeah. Figure out a way to keep that team together, because yeah, that's like another 3 years out.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, those are the two Dune movies. Hey, did you know Corinne sent us a thing about Dune?
I didn't. Let's hear it.
Cool.
Hey, nerds. It's Corinne here. So, sort of a special showtime today. I'm not able to join the nerds for the recording, but I wanted to send my thoughts in about Dune. I know you guys are going to do like a Dune doubleheader of part one and part two in the same episode. I haven't seen part one in a while. I remember really liking it. Of course, I was the only nerd who had it on my Filmsplosion. Was that 21 list? Yeah, I really enjoyed it. And I remember watching it with my dad probably like a year ago now. And it, you know, even on the small screen, like, it still looks really good. So yeah, I'm kind of kicking myself I didn't go see like a rescreening of it before part two came out. But honestly, yeah, part two is amazing. I saw it a week ago with Jerry, so I don't remember everything about it right now, but it was really well made, fantastic in terms of cast and acting, the effects, the pacing. I have a few tiny problems with it, and there are a couple of things that I'm like, huh? That I'm, you know, but it sounds like I've never read the books, I'll say that, but just from what I know of the people who have, they really enjoyed this movie for the most part. Maybe there's some out there who are purists and they hated it, but no, it was a really good movie. I definitely want to see it again, and I've been checking the local theater for the, you know, availability in the IMAX screenings, and it's just been packed. Even on like Wednesday night at like 4:30, it was pretty full, and I was like, dang it, like I want to get like the good spot. I don't want to have to be like all the way in the front or all the way on the side. Like I want to be, you know, middle of the theater, and you know, hopefully I can get some more friends to see it with me. But yeah, I had a great time seeing it. Kicking myself because the way it worked out with Jerry and I going to the screening the Thursday night it came out, we had to go to just a regular screening just because of the timing. And yeah, kicking myself I didn't see it in the IMAX first, but I definitely want to. And like I said, I've been looking, and I'm telling you, like all the IMAX screenings, they're not like, most of them are borderline sold out, at least like on the weekends or like late evenings. But yeah, even like the midday showings are packed. So anyway, it's definitely worth seeing in the theaters, like if you haven't seen it yet. Some people, I heard reviewers saying like, you don't even need to see part one. And I'm like, I kind of think you do. It definitely gives you way more context for what's going on. Like they kind of give you like a backstory to kind of help fill in like everything that happened. I do think that at least this movie can stand alone on its own. You don't have to have seen part one for part two to pay off. It does kind of tell a self-contained story. Obviously, if you've seen part one, it hits harder when you see part two. But I mean, yeah, like I said, like part two is kind of its own movie, in a way. And I mean, if you want to watch them back to back, I mean, you can do whatever you want. I thought part one on its own was really great, and I think part two on its own is also really great. And if I ever watch them, you know, in one long sitting, I'm sure they will be amazing. But we're not there yet. And yeah, don't know what else to say about it. Yeah, I love the cast. I love seeing all these behind the scenes stories coming out with like the set photos, the different effects that they did, and of course all the memes about it. I love all the memes. But yeah, Dune Part Two, great movie. I think it's going to be one of the kind of standard bearers of the cinema year. You know, I don't know what else is coming out this year that I was super excited for this movie. And other than like some niche anime things, there's nothing else coming out later this year that I am similarly excited for. Maybe some stuff with the end of the year. I don't remember what all is coming out, but yeah, like Dune, absolutely seen in the theaters, totally worth it. Oh my gosh, the black and white sequence on its own was like worth the price of admission. And yeah, anyway, I'm sure the Ryan and Brad and Zach, if he's on, you know, they're praising it, and it definitely deserves all the praise. Like I said, I have some tiny, like, nitpicky things that I can really, you know, get into if you really wanted me to, but I'm not gonna, because, you know, this movie is an A+, and I can't wait to see it in the theaters again. So, all right, those are my thoughts, guys. Hope you all have fun with whatever else you're doing, and I'll talk to you guys next time with something. Bye.
Thanks, Corinne. I know she really loves these movies. She was excited for it. I don't know if she read the books.
Yeah, I don't know.
But she's, you know, she loves Star Wars, so I can see why she'd, you know, gravitate towards these films. Or maybe she just has a huge crush on Christopher Walken. I don't know.
Probably.
Yes. I mean, don't we all? Right on. So that's fun.
Yeah, that's, like I said, they are quality movies for sure, and you should check them both out. But just, yeah, they're not like movies I love. You know, the story's just not there for me.
I mean, I'll watch them again.
Yeah, I'll watch the third one. I want to know where this goes.
Yeah, I guess I'm still more of a Star Wars guy.
Yeah, the Star Wars ones are more fun.
Yeah.
For this concept, but yeah.
This is the big news story of the week.
It's real news.
So somebody that, I mean, is really a big deal, but it never really connected with me is the passing of Akira Toriyama, who created Dragon Ball, which, I mean, did you ever watch that show, Brad?
I did, back in the early 2000s. Everyone else was loved it. I was kind of like, so they're just going to yell at each other for like 30 minutes and maybe fight, three episodes from now. It's a little bit stretched out for me, so I never really could get into it.
Yeah, but he's so influential, but he'd also developed some Super Nintendo games, Chrono Trigger and Dragon Quest series. Mm-hmm. Which, again, I played them. I was never really a big turn-based RPG fan, but they were beautiful games. And his characters are so iconic that it is a pretty big deal that, you know, he passed away. I mean, again, even though it's not my cup of tea, I mean, he's incredibly influential in that medium.
Oh, for sure. Totally. Like, yeah, iconic. Like, Dragon Ball alone is just a huge franchise. I think it's that, like, I don't know, five or six different series. But yeah, also Chrono Trigger is like a classic SNES game.
Oh, it's always talked about as being one of the best.
Yeah. So definitely an iconic person. So
it's always a bummer. He passed away really young too. He was only 68.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, like I said, I've never watched a Dragon Ball series, and I know Corinne always is, you need to watch this. You should watch Dragon Ball Z Superhero or however it goes. Which, according to his thing in Variety, was the last thing he worked on. But, I mean, I could pick out Goku out of anywhere. And I always remember when we worked at GameStop, that Dragon Ball Z game for PlayStation 1.
Yeah.
That was the one when it came in, was always the, like, holy grail. And we always, when it came in, very rarely. But I always remember we put it behind the counter. It had to be in the locked cabinet.
Yeah, highly sought after game. Like,
yeah. How much? Do you remember how much? It was like $130, wasn't it?
Was it? I thought it got up to 80, but yeah. I mean, not surprisingly, yeah.
Yeah, I just always remember. I remember I was working one time and it came in, and because I think we gave $80 store credit for it.
Yeah. I know the employees wanted it.
Yeah. Oh yeah. As soon as it came in, if an employee didn't want it. You know, I'll let everybody in on a secret. When we worked at GameStop or Game Crazy, when a game came in we wanted, it never made it out onto the floor. There was a drawer right underneath the register we put it in.
And a lot of them sat there for like, I don't know, a year before we actually bought them.
Yeah, I know. We were dicks. Because I did that with all the original Mega Mans. I remember some guy brought them in and I put them right in that drawer. So, yeah. That's what you need to know. If you ever go to GameStop and you're wondering why it's always, you know, Madden footballs and, you know, games that come out every year, the stuff they usually have used, it's because assholes like us wouldn't let the good stuff go out on the floor.
Yeah, that's one of the perks of being the middleman.
Only perk for working at GameStop.
But they don't even like really deal in classic stuff anymore that much. So, meh. if you're into modern games, like, I'm sure they still do that for that, but I don't know, there's nothing out there until they get back into like level 7 is more my jam now.
Oh yeah, like I went there I told you the first time a couple weeks ago. It was really fun. And but I have been playing Super Mario RPG on the Switch. It's been really fun.
Yeah.
The game's exactly the same, but they kind of incorporated the Zelda Link's Awakening style to it, where they kind of look like Lego guys. Or not Lego, what's the thing I'm thinking of?
They basically
look like little like cartoon plastic toy things.
Yeah, it's like little cel-shaded
Yeah, it looks wonderful, and the game's still really fun. So,
yeah.
Definitely pick it up. And I did get the Mario Donkey Kong too. I'm excited to play that. I love that game on the DS. And really cool too. Later this month, that Princess Peach game comes out, which is the first one since Super Princess Peach, which was a really underrated game for the 3DS. So I'm excited to play.
Yeah, I just re-upped my Nintendo Online subscription. So it's a bunch of like N64 and like Game Boy Advance and games that are, yeah, I missed during that era that I get to play now.
Yeah, it's fun. Yeah. Crown Jewel, Nintendo as developers. Hey, we watch films throughout the week in a segment I call What We've Been Watching.
So, this is the stuff we've been watching.
Brad, how was your week at watching films?
Really kind of 2 weeks. I saw a lot. Out in the theaters now, or maybe disappeared yesterday, because it's a, kind of a new week. The Taste of Things is, you're gonna love this. It's a French movie.
Oh, nice.
spoken in French.
Tell me more.
Yep. French dialogue. This guy and this woman, and they work at a hotel in France, and they're like super chefs, the best in the country, I think. And this dude's buddies roll in, and he's like the premier chef, but he's only really that good because of what's her name, Juliette Binoche's character. She's like the secret ingredient to his life. And he's harbored this love for her for, gosh, probably like 20 years. But she doesn't want to get tied down to any man. So,
yeah, fuck men.
So he's preparing this, special dinner for his bros. And it's like a good half the movie. It's just, like these five dudes just like nerding out on food, just like savoring everything. The movie has no music. It's all just natural sound.
Oh my God. It sounds more French as you talk about it.
So you're really savoring like the kitchen sounds and the eating sounds.
Oh, cool.
But sadly, as we go through the movie, we find out that Juliette Binoche is not well. She has an illness that she's sort of downplaying. And so head chef guy's like, I need to make her my wife as soon as possible. And so, yeah, he finally he finally goes into the kitchen and does the cooking and prepares her like an amazing meal. And that finally turns her around. And so, they set a date, but she doesn't make it, Ryan. She doesn't make it to the date.
Spoilers. You knew I was going to watch this movie.
I know you were. And definitely everyone listening was going to watch it. But it is like, I don't know. I guess I'm 40 now. Like really good cooking is actually interesting. Like I'm like, oh man, I've just been eating garbage for like my Instacart days. That I'm just like, man, that's like, I don't even eat meat that I still like that chicken looks amazing. So yeah. And then there's also like this, other like little like teen girl in the neighborhood who has a really good palate. So they're like testing some stuff to see if like she could be the next head chef. Like, you know, after several years of training, of course, but like she's, you know, is she a savant for cooking? And so, it's kind of cute that she's like popping in and like sampling the dishes and like just from taste alone saying like, you know, here's like 20 ingredients I can taste in it. And then the head chef's like super impressed. So yeah, it's a really good movie, but it is, yeah, kind of simple and like the cinematography is great. And yet, like, don't go watch it on an empty stomach, cause just be like, oh man, I just want to eat everything they're eating. And then I watched, The Last Picture Show, which is a Bogdanovich movie from 1971 about this dying Midwest town. It's one of those.
Is it the most famous one? It might be.
I think so. Everything when you go to see like one of these retro movies at the Charities, they had like instead of commercials and trailers and things, they have like, they play like the Criterion, like making of bonus feature beforehand. So there was like this interview where like Luke Wilson was interviewing all the actors from that movie and everything. And so, yeah, it definitely seemed like this was, his big thing. 'Cause it was like, he was a reviewer, just a regular film critic who was like, fine, I'll put my money where my mouth is and I'll make a film. And
yeah, he's definitely on a lot of those Criterion as a film historian.
Yeah. So yeah, he's like, yeah, I'm going to make this movie. Like it was a book. So he adapted the book and, yeah, it's just about, you know, this dying Midwest town. I forget the character names, but you know, Jeff Bridges is in it. Cloris Leachman, Cybill Shepherd. And, yeah, they're just like teens in their senior year and they're just kind of like, I don't know, doing coming of age stuff, you know, up to graduation. And then finally they graduate and it's like, well, what's next? You know, the theater in the main street's going out of business and our mentor who ran the bars died. And yeah, it's just like a little slice of life thing, which I was kind of bored through most of it. Just like, okay, where's this going? Okay, we're just watching all these people just exist, and then I feel like I've seen this movie before type thing, but yeah. Yeah, have you seen it?
Yeah, a long time ago. Only because he would pop up on like special features all the time. And so I was interested, but then I saw it and I don't remember anything about it. So everything you just told me, I'll take your word for it.
Sounds a little familiar, yeah. the other cool thing is about these Chez Artistes retro screenings is there's a guy, I think his name is John Anselone. Apparently he's like some film scholar. So he comes in and after the movie, we sit around for like an hour and a half and he just talks about the movie and like all like the importance of them. So that's kind of cool. So I appreciated that. A little more than the movie.
Yeah, I mean, I remember that for when we did the Cary Grant stuff.
Oh, yeah. They did that for that? I forgot.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he doesn't come to all of them, but yeah, he's done the last two I've been to, and the next one he's coming out for is Jaws, but next week is The Getaway, so there'll be a gap, but yeah. Yeah, and then the last two things I saw, there's a movie called DC Cab from 1983.
Is that the Mr. T one?
The Mr. T one, yep.
I haven't seen that in years. I remember renting it at this mom and pop video store with my brothers.
Yeah, I was like, it's an 80s movie. It's got Mr. T on the cover. I'm going to give it a shot. And it does not age well.
I don't even remember it. I just remember the cover of him, like the cab door is, like he's holding it or he ripped it off or something.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. He's holding it. He's not even like the main character of the movie though. It's a Joel Schumacher movie. I think his second one directing effort. And it's about, you know, if they had tied it into Taxi, it could have been like a Taxi movie, like that show Taxi with Christopher Lloyd and everybody.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just like this ensemble movie about these cabbies in DC, Washington DC, and they're trying to like save their cab business. Yeah, they're like the bottom of the rung cab business in town. And yeah, they're all a bunch of misfits and they're going to go out of business and they have to find a way to not do that. And then like halfway through the movie, suddenly there's a kidnapping and the main guy, Adam Baldwin, who is like shown up from out of town, decides to get hired there. He gets kidnapped with like, I think the governor's kids. And so in addition to saving the cab company, the cabbies all band together to like go on a rescue mission and get them away from these like terrorists, I guess.
All right.
Yeah. It's got Gary Busey in it. He's like one of the cabbies. Bill Maher's one of them.
I've seen it. I don't remember anything about it though.
Yeah, it's just kind of like, I don't, like, not sure what the focus of the movie, other than like they're trying to save. But yeah, they do have like a couple really awesome lines. in this mess of a movie. Early on, like the first scene, or second scene, Mr. T's like picks up, this, I don't know, congressperson and his, mistress, or she's a prostitute. And when she starts, giving a blowjob in the backseat of his car, he's like, you know, he hits the brakes, gets out, like rips out of the car and, says like, why don't you get off the street and get a decent job? And she's like, cause I need the bread. And he's like, well, then go get a job at a bakery. Yeah. And then like later on, you find out, like, I think the mayor is, sleeping with, there's this, cabbie Harold, who's kind of like the owner of the company, also the, like the mechanic. And he finds them together. And so he throws him out the window into like the pool. And before he says that, he's like, you know what your problem is, Bravo? You're so short. Your brain is too close to your asshole. Yeah. So a couple funny lines, nice. But yeah, overall, there's like a lot of like N word usage by Gary Busey in it. You know, when they're kind of breaking in the new guy, they take him to a strip club. So there's a lot of boobs in that. I think you'd like. Surprised you don't remember. yeah. But it should be more fun than it is, I think. Yeah. Like I said, this could have been the Taxi movie. I think Joel Schumacher just wanted to make a second movie, so he wrote this thing. And I'm not sure, like, other than just to get something made, you know, I'm not sure what the story was supposed to really be. And then the last thing I saw was The All Nighter, which I don't know if you know. It's a movie directed by the mom of Susanna Hoffs from the Bangles.
Don't know what that is.
Yeah. Shocking. Like, yeah. So her mom directed this movie with her in it. It's got Joan Cusack and Dee Dee Pfeiffer, Michelle Pfeiffer's sister. The director of Tar, Todd Fields, is an extra as one of the bellhops in the movie. And it's just these girls, these three girls who are about to graduate from college, and they're two like surfer bro sort of boyfriends, who are in law school, and
I object.
Yeah, pretty much. One of his name's Killer, the other one's CJ. And yeah, they surf a bunch, and then the girls have this plan to have like one huge party for themselves before, you know, they go off from college. And again, you think there'd be like more fun, zany stuff, but really the party is like Susanna Hoffs goes to a hotel to meet this like famous band guy who's like in a band, like he's a musician, he's like got a record. He happened to live in the house that they're staying in at one point. And he shows up one day just be like, yeah, I just stopped by because like I miss this place and I just want to see what's happened to it. And then like, I don't know, 10 years since I haven't been here. And then Susanna Hoffs is like apparently a big fan of him. So she's like, oh, I think I can hook up with this guy. And so she tries to like track him down at the hotel. And then the other two girls also happen to go to the other hotel and they get mistaken as prostitutes. So the hotel staff gets them arrested. And then Susanna Hoffs has to, and lead surfer guy has to like devise a plan to get them out. And, Pam Grier is the, police officer there. So she gives them shit, makes it difficult for them to, get them out. And, that's about all that happens. I was like, this should be like a super bad situation where they just kind of fall into zany situation one after the next. And yeah. Nothing really. Joan Cusack is like the film nerd girl, so she's kind of videotaping everything. Cops even let her keep her camera when they're in the back of the paddy wagon.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
So, but it's so like 1987, like music and production design and like neon that it's kind of fun in that way.
Right on.
Yeah. And then the very last thing is, real quick, I saw The Room. Greg Sestero was there doing live commentary for it.
And, was it as crazy as the one we saw?
It wasn't. The audience, there was a lot of newbies in the audience. So there was like two areas of the audience that I could sense like, oh yeah, these people have been to the Esquire before. And then the rest of them were like, what are these people doing? It's funny, but I don't know like what, why they're yelling out this stuff. And then, Greg didn't really do like a commentary track like you would on a DVD. He would kind of like shoot his own jokes occasionally. And then once his sex scene comes, he dips out because he doesn't want to watch it. And he doesn't come back in until after, like really late in the movie, like around Tommy's birthday party, he comes back and says stuff again. But I recorded it and you can hear a couple of those clips right now.
I know Johnny's supposed to be a banker, but with that suit, he looks more like a waterbed salesman. So Denny was supposed to be 16, but he's actually the oldest cast member. In the rough cut, this scene was 7 minutes long. We made it through one, guys. I have to show my ass to sell this movie. Maybe she should marry Johnny.
And he bought you a car, he bought you a ring.
Just our luck, the air conditioning broke and it was 103 degrees. Tommy said, don't worry about air conditioning, Greg. You have to be sexy.
And candles.
What candles?
Music.
What music?
The sexy dress.
What sexy dress?
What's going on here?
I told Tommy none of these things are present. He said, Greg, audience will not care. So we shot this movie on two cameras at the exact same time. So you're going to be treated to shots that are completely out of focus, like this one. And all these weird moaning sounds you hear were all recorded after the film, with Tommy directing me saying, more passion, as I recorded these sounds in a booth. So I'm going to sit this one out, guys. Have a break, but enjoy it. Peter quit, so we cast this guy.
I don't understand anything, man. Leave your stupid comments in your pocket.
He's like, what did you just say?
It's not over. Everybody betrayed me. I fed up with this world.
I go back to my own planet. Let's get ready for the best line of the entire film. Get ready, Johnny.
You can come out now, Johnny. She's gone.
In a few minutes, bitch.
Hey, Johnny. What's your favorite Jordan Peele movie?
Get out of my life! Why? Johnny, why?
So we can't leave because the staircase is fake. Thank you so much, guys. You're an awesome audience. Thank you so much for coming out. And thanks for supporting the room for 20 years. Thank you.
That Greg Sestero, man.
Such a cut-up.
He's Johnny's best friend.
He is his best friend. I'm super bummed because no one did the run up to the screen and the Hey's Johnny part, and I totally should have.
So is he live in person or is he like in a different place?
No, he was in the draft house, the Littleton draft house. He had a merch booth and everything, and he overcharged me for the script I bought. I don't know how to get that back, like by $10.
Oh, yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah, like I got three service charges for using my credit card. I was like, three? All right. I guess I'll just
tearing you
that.
Apart, man.
Yeah. But yeah, it was awesome. He did like a, before the movie, he did like, there's a version of the script of the room before kind of like what you saw. So it's like even weirder. So he read a scene from that with a bunch of other people from the audience and then answered some little questions and then did the movie and said a couple things and it was fun.
Nice.
Wish he could have been there. I know you don't want to watch the movie again, but
you know, when it has stuff like that, it might be fun.
Yeah, I asked him the keep your comments in your pocket line, like where'd that come from, and like why didn't it change? Like it just seems such like an odd thing that no one would question. And he says like he just said like, yeah, it was at that point, you know, that late in the movie, I just didn't question anything. I just rolled with it.
You should have got him to do a bumper for our podcast.
Yeah. I should have. I was like, maybe if I met him a few more times, but there's like a line for the merch and everything, so I didn't want to be like that guy.
Yeah, I got you.
I don't want to be like, hey, how much would it cost for me? Like, because then you got to preface like, hey, I want to do this thing for my podcast. And you, like, as soon as you said that, say that, you think they're thinking, oh God, this guy wants to get me on his podcast, which I know they don't want to really do.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'm just going to avoid it. I'll take, like, I would be fine offering like, hey, you know, all your merch here, I'd rather, can I just pay you $20 to do like a thing in my phone that just says like, hey, you're listening to Rindler's podcast. But again, like the line behind me, I don't want to be like,
yeah, dance for me, monkey, dance.
He's going to come back around at some point, I'm sure, but not the Esquire. That's the other news I should have talked about. In the news section, Landmark Theaters is not going to renew their lease at the Esquire. So,
bummer.
Yeah. Like there's nothing, I guess, standing in the way of the property owners just knocking it down now. So,
that's sad.
Try to go there as much as you can until June. I'm going to try and designate it as a historic landmark, but the chances of that are very, very small of getting approved. You know, we've talked about maybe Landmark doesn't renew the lease, but maybe some other film theater entity could move into that space, or just can we just start our own and just be the Esquire without the Landmark branding? So I feel like the Landmark didn't renew because the property owners want to develop it, so they just like, hey, you renew it, here's the price, and it's like completely unrealistically unaffordable, so you won't want to renew. So I feel like even if we propose like, hey, we'll operate the theater, they'd be like, no.
Yeah, I mean, that's such a coveted corner right there.
Yeah,
that it sucks, but they can put some sort of thing below and build, you know, lofts above. And
well, that's my plan. It's like, why gut the theater? Like, why not just like, okay, the parking lot, there's plenty of off-street parking, so you don't really need the parking lot. Like it's only really full like at 7 o'clock on weekends, you know? So
yeah.
why not just do one of those angled, like dig into the ground, so it's like this, it's down below the street but at an angle, and then you could build your little lofts or whatever on top of that and just like do an overhang above the Esquire like the sea does, you know?
Yeah.
But I guess they're just not that creative.
Fuckers.
So anyway, yeah, bad news.
Yeah. Did I talk about Batman, the Doom that came to Gotham last week?
I don't think you did.
Yeah, so I'm always a fan of the Batman animated movies that come out for DC. This one was okay. I was excited because the Mike Mignola connection, and it was kind of a horror story. And I don't know, like, there's cool because the Elseworld world Batman stuff is kind of fun. But I don't know. It was definitely one of the weakest ones that I watched. The world is cool, but that's about it. I also introduced my kid to Napoleon Dynamite.
Oh yeah.
Which was really fun because now he says stuff like, I heard he flipping told you. So,
did he ask for tater tots?
No, that'd be badass. But I forgot like how much it lives in its own world, that movie, you know?
Yeah.
And how everybody talks in it, and just the bizarre dialogue of, hey, Napoleon, what'd you do this summer? I already told you. I spent it all summer hunting wolverines in Alaska. What gun did you use? A freaking 12 gauge. They're attacking my family. What the heck would you do? It doesn't make any sense at all. But for some reason, it totaled, that movie works 100%. It's just bizarre and funny and great.
Yeah, it bums me out. There's like a bunch of people I know who hate that movie. It's like, how really? Do you hate that movie?
Like, it's, they don't get it.
Yeah, it's so weird and fun.
Tina, eat the food.
Hey, Napoleon, bet you I can throw a football over the mountains.
I didn't even put it together. Uncle Rico is the Wolfman at the Monster Squad.
Yep.
I go, oh, shit.
Yeah, he's a bunch of stuff that I'm like, oh, man, never put it together. What is
And I totally forgot the part where, what's the Glamour Shots girl's name? Deb?
I think so.
First shows up and she says, yeah, I'm trying to raise money to go to college. And Kip says, your mom goes to college.
That's exactly what I was trying to remember.
That like triggered her.
He's so impressed with himself.
Yeah.
Just burned this total stranger.
Can you bring me my chapstick? No, just use the one that the nurse has. Gross.
Hey, Napoleon, give me some of your tots. No, get your own.
Idiot. It's like $6 an hour. I mean, $1 an hour. Oh, shit, that fucking movie. I've been doing the thing where I have all these Blu-rays that I need to watch. So I just been randomly having Google pick a number that I've assigned these movies randomly. And one of them is R.I.P.D., which is the old Ryan Reynolds, Jeff Bridges comic book movie. And it's not good.
Yeah.
I didn't remember, you know, because it's one we did an episode on it.
We did. That's and how bad it was. I've completely forgotten like anything that happens in it.
Dude, so I'm watching it and I don't remember scenes at all. I couldn't remember what happened next. And I go, man, at least this movie's only like 85 minutes long. It's like, I mean, there is some fun stuff in it. I'm not going to say it's a total like train wreck. But you definitely can tell there's one, studio interference in it. And two, because it came out in 2012, I think. And they tried to
2013.
They did CGI, like big people monster things, and it just looks bad.
You can hear our exact review of it on episode 110.
Wow, that's over 500 episodes ago.
Yep.
Yeah, so just watching it. I mean, Jeff Bridges is really fun in it. Yeah, and Kevin Bacon. I didn't even remember Kevin Bacon was in it.
What?
yeah, he's the bad guy.
He's the bad guy in Super. I remember that.
Yeah.
And X-Men First Class.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's okay. It literally still has the trademark, like, sticker when I took it out. It was $4.
Oh, that episode had Cora and Michael on it.
Did it really?
Yeah.
Wow. Our correspondent.
Yeah. Shout out to those people we haven't heard from in a while.
Sure. You can also see Cora in our episode 6 of the pod show. She's eating the candy. I watched Eternals again for the first time since theaters, and that movie actually is better than I remember it. There's still some weird nonsense, but it's a beautiful film. It truly is a beautiful film. And so it was fun going back and watching it with some fresh eyes.
Yeah, it's so weird. It's been like, what, 2-3 years since that movie? And
yeah.
No one in the MCU is acknowledging that there's this giant Eternal sticking out of the earth.
I know. I got this Robert Downey Jr. Blu-ray for a movie called In Dreams that stars Annette Bening. And one, the transfer on the Blu-ray is not that good. It looks like a very minor upgraded DVD transfer. But in the film, Annette Bening plays a woman, and her husband is Adrian Quinn. Does that sound right?
Aiden Quinn.
Aiden Quinn, thank you. And their daughter is kidnapped and murdered by a serial killer who is Robert Downey Jr. And he's not in it very much. And I'm pretty sure this was 1999. So he was definitely in a bad place at this time in his life. But it has a vibe of it wanting to be Seven and the MTV late 90 quick cuts, if that makes any sense. Because Annette Bening is able to communicate with Robert Downey Jr.'s character Vivian through dreams. So he's like Freddy Krueger, but not a demon. I don't know. She's way over the top in it and hams it up in every scene. It's okay. It's not that great. It's definitely not one of the best Robert Downey Jr. movies. But, you know, because I'm a completist, I had to get it on Blu-ray because he's in it.
I was going to say, yeah. Back when you were doing this whole Robert Downey Jr. Filmography thing, and like your goal was to get all the movies of his on Blu-ray. Did you achieve that?
Yeah. So not all his movies are available on Blu-ray.
Which ones are you still missing?
I don't know. I'd have to go and look. I want to say like The Pickup Artist. A lot of his like mid-90s stuff is slowly trickling out. I think 2 years ago I got Heart and Souls. I don't know how to, and Good Luck and Good Night isn't on Blu-ray, which is really weird because it's, you know,
it is
a really big, no, it's like a really big,
cause I have it on HD DVD.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's not. I think I only have it on DVD. If it's on Blu-ray, I've totally missed it.
Yeah. You might want to check on that one because I'm pretty sure it is. Do you have Hail Caesar?
No.
Cause that just came to mind because like it, you know, it's probably the MVD rewind collection.
Yeah.
So, like they just put it out. So I wasn't sure if you picked it up or not.
I haven't picked it up yet. So I've been trying to be a little better these last couple weeks or months because I have all these movies I need to watch. And this Tuesday I have 3 movies coming. So I'm got to, the James Cameron Ultra HD stuff, True Lies is coming out and The Abyss. And I have the Looney Tunes coming. So I'm trying to be good. And the last thing I watched is a new movie. It's called Stop Motion, which was in Fantastic Fest. And I really wanted to see it. And I saw it was playing at a Regal. And then I just happened to look one day and it was also playing at the Draft House. So I went and saw it. And it's about this woman who is working with her mother, who is a really famous stop motion animator. And her mother has such bad arthritis. She's basically telling her daughter that she has everything that needs to be happening. And she's really hard on her. Her mother suffers a stroke and she decides to finish her mother's film. When she does that though, she decides not to finish her mother's film and make her own film about, this guy, kind of like I can't believe I can't remember his name, but it's like a monster guy who comes to your house at 3 nights. The first night he knocks, the second night he touches you, and then the third night, I'll let you just figure out what he does.
Yeah.
But the stop motion in it is incredible. It's a really creepy movie. There's some violent things in it, but it's more about the atmosphere and the creepiness of the stop motion animation. But the stop motion animation is freaking incredible in it. And it's quiet enough and slow moving enough that I really enjoyed it. And there's some pretty gruesome things in it. So if you're looking for a different kind of horror movie, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I was going to try to check it out, but I totally missed it.
Yeah. So yeah, definitely do. If you have an opportunity, I don't know if it'll start streaming soon or whatever, Yeah, that's what I watched this week. This week or next week, we're seeing Imaginary. So that should be fun.
And then, Film Solution 84.
Yeah.
Coming some week soon.
Yeah, very soon. I'll keep you posted on that. And the Oscars are this Sunday, so we'll see you at the movies. Well, a real nerd knows who shot. A real nerd can follow the plot. A real nerd will come out of the guts. Lights, camera, action. Real
nerds. Thanks for listening to Real Nerds Podcast, a Nebulous Visions production. Stream or download episodes, read articles at realnerdspodcast.com. Stream us on Apple or Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or iHeartRadio. Follow us on Facebook, Real Nerds Podcast. Twitter and Instagram, at Real Nerds. Watch us on YouTube, Real Nerds Podcast. Email us at realnerds@gmail.com. Call us at 720-6NERDS5. Thank you to Sparks Mandrill, Mike at Plan 9 Studios, and Bologna for all of our groovy theme songs. And that's how you fucking do it.